This is a conversation with Russell Delman. Hi, Russell.
Hi, Serge.
So how did you get into focusing?
Well, I kind of like to say I came in through the back door. And what I mean by back door is I was teaching a work for a long time, I still do, called The Embodied Life. And I was teaching a number of times in, it started in Munich, Germany, where I was teaching, and at the end of a weekend seminar, these two people came up to me and said, oh, you must have studied with Gene Genlin. And I said, well, no, I know the name from the focusing book, but I have never read it or studied with him. He goes, well, you sound like you're teaching similar things in part of your work. I said, well, that's interesting. So then that happened three times in three different places. Simultaneously, Gene and I have a mutual friend named Zalman Schachter, who's a rabbi, wonderful, wonderful man. And Zalman, when I would talk to him on the phone, would say, you should call up Gene Genlin. You're hearing the same muse. You're hearing the same muse. And I don't call people out of the blue so much. But one after the accumulation of these experiences, Zalman saying that three or four times, these experiences with these people, out of the blue, I call up Gene. This is maybe 8 years ago. And we just really connect on the phone. And so we start talking. And we start, what I find out later, we start focusing with each other by just listening, talking, listening, talking, listening. And then I realized, oh, I want to learn this. What he's doing, I don't know really what we're doing. And I had heard of Ann Cornell and through a variety of things connected with her. And was trained in her style of into focusing, of interrelationship focusing, which was very, very congruent with my way of looking at things, my way of working. And out of that, I still have this regular phone calls with Gene. He's really my only regular focusing partner. And and I have learned so much through him and through Anne and through the focusing community. The when I say I was doing similar work, I also want to say that I took so much over these last years from the sophistication of Gene's language and understanding, and I feel really indebted to the focusing world for a maturation of a certain part of my work.
So it's funny of how you're describing it and these coincidences, and I think in other occasion I heard you talk about you were doing focusing before focusing. So yeah. I'm interested maybe in talking a little bit about, you know, the similarities and the difference of focusing before focusing and focusing after focusing.
Well, let me kind of back up a little bit and move towards that. I love that question.
Okay.
My work, my understanding is grounded in three legs that really look toward the same thing in three different ways. One is a Zen-based meditation. Another is a Feldenkrais movement work. And the third is what I call guided inquiry, which is very much focusing-based. And so one, I teach a lot in Zen centers, and one student of mine who was a Zen monk, we were sitting around the table, and people said to me, well, are you a Zen teacher? People who didn't know me. And I said, well, no, I'm not. I'm no longer part of a lineage. I'm not a Zen teacher. And my student said, well, Russell teaches the Zen before Zen. And I really liked that. Mm-hmm. That's something about that. Inside, I went, yes, that's what I'm trying for. I don't know that I succeed, but it's the place that Zen came from before it got too formalized in a Japanese style or a Chinese style. I'm interested in what was moving inside of people that became Zen Buddhism. Yeah.
So I want to maybe restate that phrase. It's very beautiful that what was moving inside of people before it became Zen. So yeah. That feels very, very beautiful to pay attention to that.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, that's a good place to pause. Yeah. Yeah, because that, Serge, that is getting to what you were asking about focusing before and after. What was moving in me that people were recognizing that was similar to Gene and to the work that grew was that inkling of a quality of inner listening and a willingness to be alive in not knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And what comes with that is the kind of pausings and the kind of listening and the kind of checking inside and all of that was there, but it was not named.
Yeah.
So I had a difficult time, in some ways, communicating that to others. I was very skilled at helping people to drop into their bodies, to get in touch with feeling and sensation and imagery connected to feeling and sensation. So all of that sounds like focusing,
mm-hmm.
but it was not nearly as articulated nor as... I was less able to communicate what I was looking for.
Yeah.
I had less of a framework. And I had something that was living in me that some people could kind of pick up a little bit by osmosis, but I felt very inarticulate and unskilled at bringing people, unless they were just that small percentage who are natural focusers. And so the big difference for me as a teacher, excuse me, is being much more articulate, having much more of a framework. In terms of my inner process, it's also true that while so much of what I do now is, you know, I don't know, 80-90% similar to what I did 20 years ago internally, it's it's much more, oh, I would say deeper, richer. I take more time with it. I feel less alone, even when I'm focusing by myself somehow, than I used to.
Yeah.
Being part of a community, even if I'm not actively at so many conferences or interacting so directly with a lot of the community, there's something in that collective consciousness that buoys my own inner process.
Yeah.
And that's surprisingly important.
Yeah, so something about the awareness, that presence of the focusing community that mm-hmm. actually, even though on a moment by moment, it's really not directly present in your life, and you may be just focusing on your own, but that presence has made a very big difference in the experience of your focusing.
Yes, yes, that's well said. I like hearing that back, and it's very moving. As I'm sitting here listening to you, I notice there's a way that speaks to something larger than my focusing or even the focusing community. It speaks to human beings interconnecting.
Yeah. I mean, it's very moving for me as I hear you, because actually I have a sense of you articulating something that's very close to my own experience. Simply as I am, you know, part of it is I am repeating it as I'm resonating with you to play it back for you. But there is also a part of me playing back what you have said that resonates with that personal feeling of mine. And the sense of how, the awareness of the community of focusing and the work that has been done to articulate some of these experiences is a way to validate, heighten, highlight, in a way, these tendencies that we may have had on our own, but actually, just find resonance in them in a larger community, which is a very, very moving thing.
Yes, yes, yes. And that, listening to you say that, that touches another strand that's kind of important to me, is the naturalness of focusing.
Yeah.
And this is something that I don't know if I want to say I struggle with or I work with quite a bit in my training programs, where I'm not teaching focusing. I'm teaching this broader work. We do the meditation, the movement work, and these other kinds of investigations that are connected to focusing, that are based in that kind of listening. So I spend some of the time, for the people who don't know focusing, teaching the basics of focusing. But I don't teach, I'm seeking ways of bringing about the quality of listening before we learn steps. And then having the steps kind of sneak in there as a way of organizing what you're already doing.
Yeah.
And the reason why that's important to me is every system I've been a part of, whether it's Feldenkrais or Zen or focusing or the Gestalt work I studied or any of the systems, even with the best of intentions, somehow the systemizing of it takes over a certain part of us and begins to stand in front of us rather than behind us. And that's a critical, I mean, it's part of my radical nature why I'm not teaching in a Zen lineage. I had to step outside of the lineage that I was part of for 30 years because it wasn't my way to teach in robes and to do it as part of a lineage, as much as I respect that. And also recently stepping away from the formal running of Feldenkrais professional training programs, I needed to step away, because what happens is people start seeing the world through their system rather than having the system behind them, and they're seeing the world freshly and intimately and nakedly. And I'm concerned about that in the focusing world.
Yeah.
Also.
Yeah, yeah. So that in a way, these traditions that you describe are traditions that have as a very, very strong goal to be able to access the raw experience unfiltered. And yet, because they are systems, they introduce their own filters. And it's really very, very important to you that actually the teaching of systems be subservient to the essential quality of experiencing, not the other way around.
Yeah, thank you. That's just right. That's just right. And the footnote to that, or the paragraph that follows that, is how valuable the systems can be for helping. I mean, we don't want to each one of us reinvent the wheel over and over. You don't go deep if you're spending your whole time finding your way through the thicket. We need to, you know, the old expression, we need to be these pygmies standing on the shoulders of giants, you know?
Yeah.
We need that also. And so I'm just it's very alive for me in what I call my mentorship programs. These are programs that I teach that people come to over some years, where people are learning this way of working, that we're working with that. How to get the best from the systems without having them sit on top of us or in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's challenging and exciting. And I make mistakes every day in trying to balance that.
Yeah. But I like actually the part, the sentence you just said, you know, I make mistakes every day in trying to balance that. Because, you know, very clearly you're just talking about it's not this, you know, that rigidity about getting it right. And also the part, the word balance feels exquisite, you know, in terms of, you know, that little state of it's not so, you know, that's a constant possibility of imbalance in the balance.
Yes. Yeah. And even that's so good to say it that way, because I would even say that we want the imbalance.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Feldenkrais had this beautiful phrase of, he sometimes would say dynamic stability, or would talk about a recoverable instability. That, right? It's that we're not trying to stay, walking is controlled falling.
Hmm.
Do you know what I mean? It's
like,
it's not that we're supposed to be stable. It's that we're supposed to be able to be unstable in ways that are reliable and not life-threatening.
You know what I also really very much like about your using this analogy and talking about it this way now is because as we are talking about things that are traditionally associated with mental activities like thinking and, you know, to some extent focusing, even though we talk a lot about the role of the body in focusing. When you talk about the balance, the imbalance, the falling, it brings it closer to, in a way, what our forebears before even they were hominids, you know, movement, animal, you know.
Yeah, and that's, I'm so very grateful to my teacher, Moshe Feldenkrais, for his, he was to movement what I would say Gene is to psychology or to language, or he really had this deep understanding of how human beings learn and how movement can be the ground for the growing of awareness and the possibilities of freedom in a human being.
So it feels exciting to think that actually what we're talking about now is being in touch with that quality of movement in activities that are not traditionally conceived of as movement. You know, like talking, feeling, thinking, you know, experiencing.
Yes. Oh, that's great. Yeah, to have that lens that everything would, you know, I when I'm teaching what is often called meditation, what we're exploring is the movement within stillness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because the breath is moving, the mind is moving, the blood is moving, sound is moving. There is so much movement. Feldenkrais used to say, life is movement. Movement, life without movement is unthinkable. And it's really true. If you think about it, if you if you freeze movement in any moment, mm-hmm. what you have is death.
Yep.
What you have is non-living. And Jean has such a deep understanding. That's why this word process, process is another way of saying living.
Mm-hmm. Right?
That it's always in motion, it's always changing, and somehow, you know, I so appreciate Jean's ing. You know, I use that a lot because as soon as we fall into that trap that is so easy to fall into, I even feel wrong calling it a trap because it makes it sound like we shouldn't fall into it or something. but where we try to make things into nouns and try to solidify the world to make it more controllable. And somehow the solution is always putting it back into the river of living.
Whether
that's bodily fixation, whether it's a stuck place in the body, a stuck place in a relationship, a stuck place in our mental life or our emotional life, it's all stuck means it's not part of the river. And unsticking is getting back into the movement of life.
Yeah, but you know, I want to maybe seize on what you say in the movement of life. So, you know, traditionally there's a sense of being in the moment, and maybe actually a nice way to put it is that being in the moment, it means being in the movement of life. It's not so much the moment as the movement, and being aware, feeling that movement.
That's great. That's great. I really underline how, as wonderful and essential as the whole, you know, be here now, power of now, be now, all like this, Gene's contribution of, you know, now and is so essential, because as soon as we turn now into a noun and people are trying to hold water in their hands, so of course I like to say every minute or every hour we fall down 10,000 times, but we get up 10,001.
So you know, again, that sense of the imbalance, you know, that that precariousness as opposed to the rigidity.
Isn't that beautiful? What I'm resonating now, just hearing that back, is how our work is so much like when we were infants learning to walk, that it wasn't a travesty, or wasn't unexpected, or it wasn't a mistake when we fell. We got up and there was smiles and laughter, and then we stumbled along a little more. Right? And if people were in a relationship, didn't think they were supposed to have all the answers all the time, but we're kind of looking at it like learning how to walk, maybe some of the struggles would be a little bit lighter.
And it's interesting for me, as you say that, it brings me back to that part of our conversation where you were talking about the presence in you of the focusing community. And what I'm seeing, you know, when you use that example of what it's like to be a kid and to have these supportive adults, you know, being there and, hey, it's great you fall, you're in the process of learning, is that presence, that, you know, that felt sense of the focusing community, of the kindred spirits. You know, who are supportive of being in the moment and in the movement and the not knowing.
Yes. And I'll tell you, one of the such moving things for me as I've gotten to know the focusing community a little bit over the last years, I went to my first international conference this year. That's where I met you. And it feels like I'm very gradually meeting more people. But just listening to the conversations, reading some of the emails online, the quality of support, of care, of genuine, the best of humanity that is striven for in this community is very deeply moving to me. I actually have not seen in all the other kind of communities that I've been part of, I have not witnessed that. Mm. And it really adds so much to my life. It actually adds a kind of, what I'm realizing right now, it's touching. It brings a kind of hopefulness. Mm. A kind of hopefulness that human beings can learn to be human.
Wow.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A kind of hopefulness.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, it's nice to just sit with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. 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 It's nice.
Yeah, it is very nice.
I'm really grateful for the quality of your listening and the quality of your. I'm feeling the things I'm saying come freshly to me again, and it's wonderful.
Mm. I'm really enjoying very much the, your presence.
Mm. Yeah. Mm, thank you. Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, when I think of what moved me when I started on this path, and when I think of starting on this path, I was really like 18 years old when this all, the insight, that's when I started meditating, and the insight came to me that of how we create so much of our own suffering, and how absent we are from ourselves and from each other. And that started me, you know, about 41 years ago on a path that feels like I'm still working with the original insight that I had, which is an amazing gift. I'm so grateful. I certainly don't take credit for it. It somehow in my life came early an insight that became the path of my life, and still working with this quality of intimacy and presence with the moment in whatever form, which includes our movement, our bodily experience on a kinesthetic level. It includes our emotional level. It includes our thinking. And as important as anything, includes our interrelating. And the focusing community and certainly looking towards my gratitude to Jean, really helps so much in articulating and deepening and kind of rounding some of the edges of what I feel like I've been working with my whole conscious life.
Mm.
Yeah. Mm.
So this feels like maybe a good place to conclude, unless you feel you want to add something.
Actually, that feels great. I was just when you said that, I said, "Wow, he's right." Beautiful.
Thanks, Russell.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.